Thanks for downloading and listening to Disciples View podcast. We have a lot in common. All of us want to retire one day, and the stock market might be near all-time highs, but you know what history shows us? Stock markets don't always see risk coming. So whether it's geopolitical tensions or energy disruptions, inflation or rising government debt, the real threats to our retirement plans often come from the one advisors don't see. So wouldn't it be smart to get a second opinion? You can with Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk Portfolio Review. Zach Abraham, the chief investment officer there, is a dear friend of mine. I speak with him regularly. He handles my money, my wife and I's, and he manages based upon risk management. They're always looking for ways to reduce our risk, always looking for ways to increase our upside, and always doing this in a way that, again, all about risk. If you're 5 or 10 or 15 years from retirement, you can't afford a risky portfolio. So sign up for Zach's free, no obligation portfolio review. Just go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. K-N-O-W, knowyourriskpodcast.com, or there's a link here in the show notes, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Investment advisory services out through Trek Financial LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance isn't guaranteed future results. Trek 26-112. God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley, and he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
Good afternoon, America. Alex McFarland here. Very honored to be sitting in for Todd Herman on A Disciple's View. We have got a fantastic show today because we're going to be talking about the national and international situations of the world from a biblical perspective, the war in Iran, the instability in the Middle East, then we have problems here at home domestically. And as we get into this and we look at where we are, where the world could go, and what we as individuals and as Christians, I hope you're a believer, that is, what we can do. I want to share a couple of scriptures, then I've got a very special colleague I want you to meet. But in Daniel 2, verse 21, God's word says this about nations, really the sovereignty of God over nations and rulers. Daniel 2, 21 says that God changes times and seasons. He deposes kings and raises up others. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to the discerning. And then Proverbs 21:1, and I've long taken comfort from this, even in times, I got to tell you, 34 years ago when Bill Clinton was elected president, the day after Clinton got elected, I was very despondent, very sad, when Obama had two terms, and not because I wish any ill toward anyone, I don't, but it's all about policies and positions. And bad leaders can do things that have, a decades-long ripple effect. But Proverbs 21:1 says that the king's heart is in the Lord's hands, and as the rivers of water, he turns it whithersoever he will. Psalm 22:28, for dominion belongs to the Lord, and he rules over the nations. Now, if there's anything that the Bible presents, it's the sovereignty of God, but also the responsibility of man. We have a responsibility to know truth, to stand for truth, to vote. I think citizenship and voting is very much a stewardship issue. But take comfort, regardless of the headlines of the day and the maelstrom of situations in the world, God is sovereign, and the kingdom of heaven is coming. Jesus Christ, when he was here on earth before he died and rose again, Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is among you, and the kingdom is coming in. And so that's exciting to know that with every kingdom, there's a king, and ultimately, the sovereign authority of the world and history itself is Almighty God, and God is in control. We have to do our part, and we need to know truth and stand for truth, But I rejoice. I sleep well at night knowing that God is in control. Well, I want you to meet a very special colleague and someone for whom I have so much respect. I was traveling in the summer of 24. I was at the Republican convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Charlie Kirk was there, Ben Shapiro. Charlie Kirk and I spoke to some youth, and then, of course, Charlie spoke in one of my conferences 2 weeks before he was shot a year ago. But while I was there at the RNC convention, I met the president of TexasValues.org, TXValues.org, an attorney and just a valiant patriot here in America, Jonathan Sines. And he is president and attorney for Texas Values. They're a nonprofit in the Lone Star State, where I was last week, and up until Tuesday of this week, I was in Texas. But he has served the First Liberty Institute, and he's been director of legislative affairs and attorney for First Liberty there in Texas. And just, he's an amazing citizen and patriot, Christian brother, and in my opinion, a very insightful voice on what's going on domestically and internationally. Jonathan Sines, he's with us now. My dear friend Jonathan, thanks for making time to be with us today on the American Family Radio Network.
Well, Alex, it's great to be with you again. Good to talk, and I'm sorry I missed you when you were in Texas. The next time you come, let me know, and I'll take you out for some briskets.
Oh, boy. Do you know what I said to this crowd Saturday night at the Spur Arena in San Angelo? I said, I can prove that God exists and God loves us. And I said, God's grace given to us, I can describe in one word, brisket. And the audience laughed. But
yeah, it's special.
By the way, I want to congratulate you. You recently... you got the certification to speak or argue or litigate in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. Am I right about that?
You are. Yeah. At the end of last year, my mentor and the president of First Liberty Institute, Kelly Shackelford, who's a Supreme Court lawyer himself,
nominated
me, and I went through the process of being confirmed and accepted as a member of the U.S. Supreme Court bar, which allows me to be in the courtroom during the oral arguments through the lawyer line, allows me to represent clients directly before the U.S. Supreme Court. I've been licensed to practice for over 20 years, but it's a higher level certification and admission and process you got to go through in order to be a lawyer who can practice before the Supreme Court. Now, the general public can get into the courtroom when there are oral arguments, but you usually have to sit outside overnight for the big cases. The lines are very long, and you know it's really unlikely that you're going to get in there. Your chances are very slim, but sometimes it does happen. And so, but you know, I've represented clients before the Supreme Court, but not been the main lawyer. That I've always had to team up with another attorney, which is fine. But you know, our work's become so active that there are times where you know we need to have that close relationship and that ability. And, you know, a lot of issues are going up for the U.S. Supreme Court that we're working on because we're doing a lot of great things here in Texas, and the ACLU and other groups like to challenge them, including our new Texas Ten Commandments law, which has not been appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. We did get a Court of Appeals victory on that case, and the ACLU lost, but there is still time for them to appeal. So we may see that at the U.S. Supreme Court soon, but people can learn about that new law at 10commandmentstexas.com.
Yeah, well, and by the way, congratulations. I mean, you are to be commended for achieving this level of certification. I'm just so happy for you and proud of you being able to do that. Speaking of being physically present at the Supreme Court, in April of this year, President Trump attended the oral arguments there of the case that ultimately on June 30th, the Supreme Court ruled on birthright citizenship. I mean, the fact that Trump, am I right, Jonathan, that was the first time a sitting president attended proceedings at the Supreme Court. Is that right?
I know that he was there. Whether or not that's ever happened before, it wouldn't surprise me if that was the first time. But, you know, Trump has a way of making history or, you know, doing things that haven't been done before. So it was pretty striking when he decided to do that. But, you know, I'll tell you, there's nothing wrong with when you have a case before the Supreme Court and you have a personal stake in it, if you will, regarding this being a key policy for President Trump, to be in the courtroom. Nothing signals the, you know, more to the judges that you care about the outcome of your case by actually being there when it's argued and not just having your lawyers there. So it's pretty unusual, and it may be the first time that it's ever happened, but you know, that's what oftentimes happens when people have a case before the court. The clients are there in person, and so you know, Trump knows how to make an appearance.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I want to talk about this. This wasn't specifically why I invited you on today, but let's do talk about this. You know, first of all, the June 30th decision that struck down, Trump had an executive order against birthright citizenship. And then basically the court decided, and this is very controversial, about the 14th Amendment, meaning that, you know, children are automatically citizens if they're born here. And there is a thing called, you know, birth tourism. And it is just well known that, you know, China has been sending people here to, you know, be born on American soil. You know, we haven't talked about this before the program today, but what are your thoughts on this issue, and specifically, what are your thoughts on that decision of June 30th, please?
Well, I'll say this, because, you know, our organization, the birthright citizenship is not an issue that our organization, Texas Values, has gotten involved in at this point, and it's probably unlikely because it's primarily an issue of immigration, and that's not an issue we usually work on unless it's tied to some other faith, family, and freedom issue we work on, like pro-life or religious freedom or marriage and family. But you could make the argument that there are some connection points. So I have actually had several interviews where I've covered this topic, and part of that is my connection in history and expertise at the U.S. Supreme Court and constitutional law, which this case certainly touches on some broader principles in regards to such a case. But I think, and I will say this, you know, and this is what I've said in some of the other interviews, you know, we haven't seen the last of this issue at the U.S. Supreme Court. Okay? This issue will come before the U.S. Supreme Court, I believe, again, at some point. You have to appreciate, if you step back for a second, not just this case, but in any case, the U.S. Supreme Court's approach is to really do very little in their decisions as far as, you know, making some big pronouncements and changes in law. They really usually try to find the narrowest way. And that's not a dig or something negative to say about the U.S. Supreme Court. That's in many ways how the process is set up. So the people can decide these things, and that's the way we think is best in the United States. But the Supreme Court is sort of a check and balance. So if they're going to have to get involved and rule on something where there's a conflict or a debate or a challenge to a particular policy and law, they're usually going to try to find the narrowest way. And then if something else needs to be resolved about it, someone can have another opportunity to try to get back before the U.S. Supreme Court. So I think, but, you know, the court did make a pretty important decision on this that I think surprised some people, but obviously got a lot of attention. And we know that Trump doesn't like to lose. You know, few of us do, right? And so, but we know this has been a key issue for him in a variety of ways because it deals with issues related to immigration. And I think many of us can agree that the immigration issue in many ways is about safety and national security. You know, for many years growing up in Texas, you think about the border and immigration, illegal aliens. You think about people coming from Mexico and things of that nature, with Texas's border touching so much of the border of Mexico. But it's gone far beyond that. Even though those concerns were legitimate decades ago, you have people from all over the world that take advantage of the lack of enforcement on our immigration policies. But speaking of Mexico, there's a story that broke earlier this week, that there's a hospital in South Texas that's been advertising in Mexico about a certain package that they offer if people will come to Texas and have their baby there. They say it didn't have anything to do with trying to undermine immigration laws and things of that nature, but it certainly doesn't look that way. And I think it's another example where people feel like people are gaming the system, if you will, and that there can be legitimate national security concerns and taking advantage of it, not to mention some of the awful cases that have happened and the awful victims in Texas and other places where you've had illegal aliens come into our country and they have committed some awful crimes. And so, you know, this ability for people to use the reason, if you will, or excuse, oh, I'm here to have, you know, I'm here to have my baby, or I just happen to be here. It's just one of those other circumstances where it can be abused, and I'm sure it has, sadly, in the past. And so I think we're going to see more from this, obviously, in the discussions in our country, but before the Supreme Court, too.
You know, we've got a break. Our guest here on the Todd Herman, well, the Disciples View with Todd Herman, Jonathan Sines, attorney, voice for truth, I believe, at these times. Alex McFarland here, sitting in for Todd Herman, very honored to do so. A lot more to talk about, not only the SCOTUS decision on citizenship, but Iran and what we can do as citizens as we think about the stewardship of our country. We've got a brief break. Stay tuned. More on the Todd Herman Show after this. Welcome back to the program. Alex McFarland here. You know, I'm a Christian first. My home is heaven. My king is Jesus. But I'm a passionate patriot. I love America. You know, I've done a fair amount of traveling internationally, and I don't think you have to go very far to realize how blessed we are here in America. I've always said, like, my fourth favorite holiday, Christmas, Easter, Thanksgiving, and then the 4th of July, the birth of our nation. And folks, I hope you share that passion, that patriotism for God and country, because God has raised up America, and we are so blessed. But I really believe part of the reason that we are in the spiritual and cultural battles in which we find ourselves is because America, for two centuries, has been at the absolute forefront of Christ's Great Commission. And we have been the benevolent presence in the world, not only in terms of, giving a cup of cold water in Christ's name, but really sending out missionaries, funding the spread of the gospel around the world. I think one of the reasons Satan hates America and the devil has had his operatives chipping away at our nation is because America, for a quarter millennia, has been so heavily present in the work of Christ here and around the world. Well, giving us some insights and some professional legal analysis here, Jonathan Sines, a friend and colleague, and he is with Texas Values, txvalues.org. First of all, attorney Jonathan Sines, thanks for being with us today on the American Family Radio Network.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. Good to be with you, Alex.
Good to be with you. You know, in the first segment, we were talking about the recent birthright citizenship case. Let's be clear, when the Supreme Court, you correct me if I'm wrong here, when they render an opinion, that's not law, although kind of de facto people assume it is, but the court has just handed down an opinion. Am I right?
Well, I mean, it is enforceable, and all other courts are required to follow that precedent. And so you could see it that way, and many people do, and it in many ways functions that way. This becomes the law of the land, if you will, when a particular conflict in the same nature comes up. And in a lot of circumstances, that often means, you know, anytime that issue comes up again, people look and say, oh, the Supreme Court, right? We saw Roe versus Wade allowed mm-hmm. abortion on demand. And so if anyone tried to say that you couldn't have an abortion, they could point to the Supreme Court decision and say, well, I have a constitutional right to have an abortion because the Supreme Court said I do, right? And so it very much functions that way.
And so the Supreme Court here in America is really viewed as the ultimate word on interpretation of the U.S. Constitution.
I think that's right. Yeah, I mean, that, you know, and when they're asked these specific questions, when they have a conflict before them that gets to the heart of those type of specific questions, which is their main function in many ways, right? And so, you know, I think, you know, I know that President Trump is asking for the case to be reheard, which is extremely unlikely and rare. But, you know, this case has a lot of attention around it when basically the President of the United States is asking the court to do something. I don't think it would be shocking if that carries more weight or gets a closer look. But it's not as if it's never happened. So if it's happened before, even if it's been, you know, 50 years, as some people are saying, it's certainly a possibility. And if you're in that position, you ask for those things. You exhaust all of your options. And I think the president's administration certainly is going to do that and continuing another way of demonstrating how important this issue is to him.
Do you think the founders of America intended for the Supreme Court to essentially become a legislative body?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I think there's been a lot of concern about that over the years. You know, you see this recent makeup of the U.S. Supreme Court giving a lot of deference to the states, which I think was the expectation of the founders. You know, the recent Save Women Sports decision that came out about a week ago is an indication of that. State laws from West Virginia and Idaho that the court essentially said, we're going to let them decide how to do this and not get in their way, right? We saw that with the Dobbs v. Jackson case, which overturned Roe versus Wade. If the states like Mississippi and others are going to have these type of policies, then that's up for them to decide. And we've seen it in LGBT issues and some other rulings before the U.S. Supreme Court. I think that's more of what the founders expected, that when it's really necessary, the Supreme Court will get involved and sort of establish some law of the land. But for the most part, they'll take a look at these issues. And if it's something that's within the Constitution and for states to decide on their own, they're going to defer to them.
Do you think the founders viewed, I mean, the Supreme Court is, at least in my view, and you feel free to, you know, correct me if I'm wrong here, Jonathan, but it seems like the Supreme Court is this autonomous, unilateral voice that just doesn't answer to much of anybody. And it seems like it's just nigh on impossible, almost, to rescind, you know, just by, you know, divine fiat, the Supreme Court renders a decision. It just doesn't seem right in our checks and balances government that there is this entity that acts just with autonomy.
Well, look, I mean, you look at this as part of three branches of government. There are very few cases that make it to the U.S. Supreme Court, and that's probably a good thing. It's not, you don't have an automatic appeal. So I right. think it's good to keep that in mind. As much as we might have concerns of how the Supreme Court operates, and, you know, you've got a lifetime appointment, you know, if there's a judge that's, you know, you feel like has your concern about how they're ruling, quite often they're there for life. I mean, there can be some limited circumstances where someone could seek removal, but we've not seen that happen in my lifetime. And I don't know the history of if it's ever happened, but it's something that seems very unlikely and rare. But, you know, that's part of our system, right? Very few cases, though, make it to the Supreme Court and get argued, and the court actually decides it. And so I do think there's something to be said about how rare that is. And so maybe only when it's that serious or really necessary, the court gets involved. But I do think because of the nature of our society, the nature of things, how public so many things are, we know there was a Supreme Court case that was leaked a couple of years ago related to the Dobbs v. Jackson case, the opinion, a draft of it from Roe versus Wade. And, you know, people want some accountability if they think that there's a decision that's not right. But I think that's part of it. Part of this system with the U.S. Supreme Court is to sort of insulate it from any type of influence. If the judges would just stick to their role and apply the Constitution in an accurate way, which is, I think, what frustrates us a lot, I think people would have more faith in the U.S. Supreme Court itself. And there's obviously a, you know, a political side to this. The president gets to nominate who's going to be on that court. And, you know, what's that like for the president when you've nominated someone and now they've ruled against you, which Trump is having to deal with in this circumstance, and, you know, with the birthright citizenship. But, you know, we'll see. It's when these issues come up, like the ones we're talking about, I do think it there'll be more discussions about the integrity of the U.S. Supreme Court and how it works.
How confident are you? By the way, I think this is very, very helpful, Jonathan. I appreciate it. How confident are you that the current SCOTUS justices are objectively trying to uphold the Constitution and not implementing ideologies?
So I had the benefit of listening to Amy Coney Barrett give a speech a year or so after Roe versus Wade was overturned in the Dobbs v. Jackson case. And many of us believe and feel like, and I think there's pretty strong evidence that Amy Coney Barrett getting on the U.S. Supreme Court and participating in that decision and opinion that overturned Roe versus Wade was the key. Has she not been on the court, we would have been short one vote, or we probably wouldn't have gotten there, or we needed one more vote by having her on the court. We were in that position. But she talked a lot about, you know, how important it is for her to do the right thing and to stick to her role and duty, and it for not, you know, for it not to be depending on whose side has more judges, right? And so, but I think it, you know, many of us celebrated that case and feel like the president appointed people on the case, on that court, that would overturn that. But that doesn't mean that it was a policy decision or it was a legislative decision. It means Roe versus Wade was a bad legal opinion that should not have been decided. So we have to be in tune with that. I mean, look, as an attorney myself, someone who has worked on cases at the U.S. Supreme Court and has been studying Supreme Court cases since I was in law school, if not before, I appreciate the process, and I see it sometimes a little bit different than folks that maybe are not as involved in it. I do think the judges try very hard to stick to their role, but I do think at times there are circumstances which very much look like they have deviated from that role. And, you know, look, I mean, the Save Women Sports case, I don't know how, right? It's really hard to make that argument to me that the, that Title IX and the way that we define sex is nothing, you know, is anything more than your sex at birth, and that it's not a hard question or decision. We shouldn't have Supreme Court justices who can't define what a woman is, right? Because then you get into these circumstances in these other cases, and you feel like it impacts how they decide cases instead of just looking at the history of Title IX, the Equal Protection Clause, and all of these different things that come into play in that decision. And it should have been a 9-0 decision, right? So there's reasons for us to have concerns and wonder. But we have that ability when a president is elected and there's a vacancy to, you know, maybe balance those things out or address them. But I've been around enough cases and judges and courtroom circumstances in the front and the back side that I do think most judges, overwhelming majority of them, try to stay in their role. But look, if you're on the U.S. Supreme Court and you have that right, and you're in that position and you know that you can't be removed, if you will, for the most part, based on how you decide on a case, there can be circumstances where things don't work out the way people think they should, and somebody could take advantage of that. But I still think it's the best system we have as we compare it to other countries.
I've got to ask you this. By the way, Alex McFarland here. We're talking with Jonathan Sines, an attorney, just a great American from Texas, and has been a person that I have leaned on when trying to glean insights about the law, our government, the Constitution. Jonathan, I appreciate you being with us. By the way, folks, I do want to encourage you, go and listen to our show from yesterday. My guest was Eric Metaxas, and he'll be the speaker for me in one of my conferences, August 8th. If you happen to be in the area of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, we've been doing Biblical Worldview conferences for several years in the theaters down at Myrtle Beach. I'll be at the Greg Rolls Legacy Theater. Eric Metaxas in person, August 8th. You can go and get full information at my website, which is alexmcfarland.com. By the way, it's a free event, and Eric and I will be talking about the future of the country, and there will be time for Q&A. Eric Metaxas, August 8th, and I would invite you to listen to yesterday's show, and it was really great. He was talking about our nation. Jonathan Sines. By the way, Jonathan, I've got so many questions I want to ask you, but give your website if you would.
The website for Texas Values, which is the Family Policy Council for the state of Texas, is TX, like our state, abbreviated Texas, txvalues.org, but texasvalues.org will work as well. A lot of great information on there. I encourage people to check it out.
Yeah. You know, I remember, I think it was back in 2022 when Ketanji Brown Jackson was asked, what is a woman? And you remember she said, I can't answer that. I'm not a biologist. You know, Marsha Blackburn ask her, what is a woman? What was your reaction to that? You as an attorney, and our government, you know, assumes moral truth, natural law. I mean, what was your feeling that a Supreme Court justice would say, I don't know what a female is. I'm not a biologist. What are the implications for that in the way that she would not only adjudicate, but just see reality?
Well, I'll take it a step further. I was in the U.S. Supreme Courtroom when the Save Women Sports case was argued before the U.S. Supreme Court in January. And there was an exchange about this where I think it was Kavanaugh that asked the attorney for the ACLU, for the other side that was trying to take down these laws, and they wanted men to compete in women's sports, what is a woman? Can you define a woman? And she danced all around the question, would not answer it directly, and really gave no clear answer, just sort of delayed, stammered, all these, you know, things. You're like, is there an answer coming? And at one point, Chief Justice John Roberts put his hand on his forehead and sort of over his eyes and started shaking his head like, what are we doing, right? Now, you're only going to see that if you're in the courtroom. You can't see that on the audio. So, it's not been talked about a lot, but I've talked about it a little bit, and I'm sitting there going, exactly, Chief Justice Roberts, come on. You know, we're shaking our head. It's such a simple question, but we know, I think many of us know why they don't want to answer the question, because the answer is very obvious and simple, but they also know.
Hey, hold it. Forgive me. We've got a break. We're going to come back, folks. You don't want to miss it. Jonathan Sines, Supreme Court approved attorney, Alex McFarland here. We're going to talk, what is a woman? What is a man? Stay tuned. The Disciples View with Todd Herman, Alex McFarland sitting in. We'll be back after this brief break. Don't go away.
Thanks for downloading and listening to Disciples View podcast. We have a lot in common. All of us want to retire one day, and the stock market might be near all-time highs, but you know what history shows us? Stock markets don't always see risk coming. So whether it's geopolitical tensions or energy disruptions, inflation or rising government debt, the real threats to our retirement plans often come from the one advisors don't see. So wouldn't it be smart to get a second opinion? You can with Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk Portfolio Review. Zach Abraham, the chief investment officer there, is a dear friend of mine. I speak with him regularly. He handles my money, my wife and I's. and he manages based upon risk management. They're always looking for ways to reduce our risk, always looking for ways to increase our upside, and always doing this in a way that, again, all about risk. If you're 5 or 10 or 15 years from retirement, you can't afford a risky portfolio. So sign up for Zach's free, no obligation portfolio review. Just go to knowyourriskpodcast.com. K-N-O-W, knowyourriskpodcast.com, or there's a link here in the show notes, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Investment advisory services out through Trek Financial LLC and SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performances and guaranteed future results. Trek 26-112.
Welcome back. You know, when I look at America of the 21st century, sometimes I'm reminded of Judges 5, verse 8. There's an Old Testament passage about ancient Israel. Judges 5, 8. It says, when they chose new gods, there was chaos within the gates. There was not found a shield nor a spear among 40,000 in Israel. And I've often taught on this passage, when they chose new gods, in other words, they turned away from the true and living God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and turned away from truth, really. And it said there was chaos within the gates. And I feel like in many ways that America, I love America. I'm passionate about our nation. Guys, I'm one of these that when we go to the baseball games and I tear up when I hear the national anthem, really. But we have chaos within our gates. And to help us talk about this and just really, I believe, give some insights about where our nation is, you know, Jonathan Sines, attorney and colleague, before the break we were talking about how when Ketanji Brown Jackson said she couldn't on record identify what a woman is, and I submit there's some implications when we have leaders that are either unwilling or unable to say, look, there are males, there are females. Maleness and femaleness are objective categories of existence. You were going to explain to us what might be the legal implications for such militant relativism.
Yes, and I was, while during the break, I got a chance to look up the transcript from the oral argument on the Save Women Sports case where there was an exchange about this, and I was incorrect. It wasn't Kavanaugh, it was Justice Alito, and he was asking the female attorney for the group that was did not want these laws to be in place and for there to be confusion on this issue. And here's the case in point. Justice Alito asked her, for equal protection purposes, what does it mean to be a boy or a girl or a man or a woman, right? And her response is, we do not have a definition for the court. And this is so important, Alex, because if there's no definition, then they can call themselves whatever they want. They can play in whatever sport they want. There doesn't have to be any rules to follow and a standard to follow. And that is what is almost impossible to do. So Justice Alito says, you know, on point here, well, how can a court determine whether there's discrimination on the basis of sex without knowing what sex means for equal protection purposes? And that's the point. In a lot of these circumstances, Alex, they don't want there to be some pinpoint way on how to define these issues because they want to just be able to do whatever they want and participate in these type of things, and they don't want anyone to be able to stop them and have a good reason to do that when there are good reasons to do that. And I will just tell you this, Alex, in my work, over 20 years of law and policy for Texas Values and before that First Liberty Institute, it is almost always an attack on the Bible. It is almost always an attack on objective truth from the left, from the other side, the LGBT groups that are pushing a lot of these issues, right? And we know what the Bible says and how God created the male and female. It so often comes back to an attack on the Bible and oftentimes specifically on Christianity. That is at the heart of a lot of these issues.
Well, and let me say this too, you know, having talked to a lot of delusional people at American universities in speaking or debating, Jonathan, I've met many, many students that are just willfully out of touch with reality, but even more professors. I'm talking PhDs. I'm just going to lay the cards on the table. People want to be their own God. And now, just follow me here, folks. It's one thing to say, God, you can't tell me how to behave. The Bible says, thou shalt not steal, thou shalt not commit adultery. A sinful person says, no, I want to do what I want to do. The Bible can't tell me how to behave. But transgenderism is essentially saying, God, you can't even define what I am. I was born a male or born a female. No, God, you have no claim on my body whatsoever. The pervasive relativist militant idea, I create my reality, I define my identity, my reality, God has no claim on me whatsoever, that is demonic. And really, I think this denial of maleness and femaleness, this insistence that no labels apply to me. I was even at a med school speaking, Jonathan, and you know, when I said, let's talk about human being, you know, a female human being, and some of the medical students pushed back and said, your labels mean nothing. I said, well, you know, a human being, I mean, that's not a, there's no political intent behind that label. I'm actually respectfully recognizing your humanity. But this idea that there are no boundaries, no guardrails, no truth that I have to acknowledge, I think deep down it's man wanting to be his own God. What do you say?
No, I think there's a lot of reasons to think that way, and sadly a lot of evidence of that around our country and society. And, you know, it might be surprising to people, but I don't think that law and policy solves every problem that we have or can. But I will tell you, it goes a long way, okay? The rules that we have, you know, I was taught in law school, the law is a teacher. It teaches us what is right and what is wrong and what is true and what is not in many ways. And that's the best we're going to be able to do oftentimes. It may not be perfect, but it comes pretty close, or it's the best that we can offer, because that way we can all agree this is how our society is going to be, and we agree to certain rules and principles. We agree to a constitution that has some certain unique and very important principles that everybody gets the benefit of, right? That, you know, it's not just someone's who's this color or that color. And, you know, we've addressed a lot of those issues too over the years when there's been unfairness on a variety of issues as it relates to our constitutional rights. That's what makes us special and exceptional, though, as a country. When you start allowing law and policy to really have no objective truth and not based on any consistent principle, it allows people to take advantage of them. That's why Peyton McNabb has brain damage, sadly, because they allowed a man to compete on a women's volleyball team, and he spiked the ball in her face, and she was seriously injured. That guy should not have been on the court. The net is higher for men's volleyball because everyone acknowledges that they can get taller and bigger and stronger, and it's a different game. It's a different standard.
And it doesn't mean that males are superior or females are inferior. It just means they're different. You know, all created equal. Men and women have equal worth, value, dignity, equal humanity, but we're just different. And speak to us about egalitarianism. What is egalitarianism? And Jonathan, are we living in a time of an attempted, enforced egalitarianism?
Well, look, you have to wonder about these things. That's a great question, too, to ponder and think. And, you know, I don't think a lot of people think as deeply about some of these things as we used to, right? I mean, some of that is social media. Some of that is, you know, and I don't think it's a bad thing, young people participating more in these conversations and seeing based on what their experiences are in their own world. But, you know, as someone who studied these issues, you know, these are things that come to my mind. I have a son who's taking a government class this summer, his first college class, and I'm excited for him. I don't know if he's as excited as I am, but because I know that there's so much value to learning these type of concepts and doctrines and what they really mean, and so we can look out for them and see, is that what's happening now? If it is this a good thing? Should we, you know, have some concern? And so I do think that, we're going to talk more about these things as a country and as a society. People are going to look at them politically, though, and I don't think that's really what's happening. I mean, I don't think there are many issues that people care about that if they set, you know, and look at them, it's not a political right versus left. In the Save Women Sports issue, you've got people like Martina Navratilova, one of the most famous lesbian and one of the most famous tennis players, female tennis players, saying this isn't right, what's happening to, you know, students and to athletes having men compete against them in sports. When we, you know, set down some of the our political attachments, these issues, you'll see people on the left and the right that agree with them, parental rights, even issues that we deal with on religious freedom and the Ten Commandments. A lot of people on both sides of the political aisle see it as common sense and agree with those things, but I think there are sometimes things get involved more politically, and people will allow themselves to stray from these principles because they want a certain political outcome and they want their side to win. And I think that can be problematic.
You know, have we lost the courage to sometimes say to someone, you're wrong? You know, men right. can men cannot become women. Now, we could say to our neighbor, I respect you, I appreciate you, I acknowledge our shared humanity, but you're wrong on this. Some things are objectively right, and some things are objectively false or wrong. And do you think we've lost the courage to take that decisive stand?
Yeah, no, listen, I think in many circumstances we have. And if you've been someone to say, hey, this is wrong or what you're doing is not right, that you come under all this, you know, public pressure and scrutiny and, you know, you get doxxed and, you know, all kinds of different things that people will try to do to punish you for just saying something that's common sense and that, you know, makes sense, and that's been the case for such a long time, right? You have men that are going into women's bathrooms before it was even an issue because people are looking around going, gosh, I don't know if I can do something about it. But decades before, oh, that wouldn't have happened. You know, and that person would have known, that guy would have known, oh, I can't go into the women's bathroom because some guy's going to stop me and say, hey, what are you doing? Right? So we've lost a little bit of, you know, just trusting our instincts on those things because people feel like they're going to be punished or there's going to be a lawsuit. I mean, Jack Phillips said, I don't want to be forced to make a cake that goes against my beliefs, just like I don't make Halloween cakes and gambling cakes. I'm not going to make a cake for a same-sex wedding that celebrates something that goes against my beliefs. And the guys, you know, they tried to ruin him. I mean, he's been to the Supreme Court, I don't know how many times, just trying to be able to, you know, have a private business where he's not forced to make a cake that celebrates a message that he creatively does not agree with. And that's, you know, but with those kind of punishments, it's made it hard for people just to say, hey, what you're doing is wrong. But I think we're seeing a backlash to that. I think we're seeing it swing back the other way where we're seeing common sense. You mentioned Charlie Kirk. He had a lot to do with that. You know, I met him that same summer where you and I met just before the RNC in in Wisconsin. And, you know, it's still striking to me that he's gone. You know, it's not even been a year. But I think he did a good job of that. And look what happened. I'm not saying this lightly. I mean, he was assassinated. He was murdered for, in many ways, just trying to tell the truth and say, you know, we should be able to say what's right and what's not, and to talk about it publicly.
Yeah, I know. And we knew Charlie. And this is what we're going to have to do, folks, to everybody listening. We've almost run out of time here. But we need to pray, but we need to get out of our comfort zone. And influence others, be informed. I believe American Family Radio, God uses in a great way to inform and equip and inspire people. But folks, and I plead with every citizen listening, we have to vote in the midterms. Because like you said, with the men and women sports issues, positions decisions, laws, and legislators, they have great and long-lasting impact. We as citizens in America, we're so unique that we get to participate in the election of our leaders and ultimately the parameters by which we live. Jonathan, we've only got a minute or two left. I want to thank you for your time, but give us a final word, a final challenge.
Yeah.
A homework assignment for the American listeners.
Well, listen, I want people to pray for the work we're doing in Texas, because I do think it's impacting other parts of the country. You know, we had an incredible result on our State Board of Education. We're going to be talking more about important principles from the Bible in our K through 12 teaching. It's going to be, you know, Jonah and the whale is going to be one of the stories that's a part of the required reading list. We're putting the Ten Commandments in a poster in every classroom. That's 300,000 classrooms in Texas. The court has ruled already that's constitutional. And so, listen, I encourage people to see what we're doing in Texas. Let's do more of this throughout the country. And we've got a great event on September 25th and 26th, Texas Faith Fest. People can come out to that or watch it on live stream. But I think, you know, as Texas goes, so goes the nation. But we care about the rest of the nation, too. We'd love to have a positive impact. And we ask people to, you know, to be in prayer for wherever you are, and definitely we've got to go vote.
Amen. Amen. Jonathan Sines, our guest, the voice you were just hearing, Texas Values, Alex McFarland. I'll be back at 3 Central, 4 Eastern for Exploring the Word, and I'll be on the Disciples View with Todd Herman again tomorrow. In the meantime, be encouraged. God is on His throne, but we have to do our part to be salt and light in this world. Blessings to you. Thanks for listening.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.